Yes, the rumors are true. Unfortunately, Kyle will not be joining us today to review the final three movies in the MCU in this final phase of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, leading up to the movie that we've all been waiting for, Endgame. Endgame is coming out this week. Everybody's been waiting for it. Nobody hasn't seen a trailer or talked about it on a daily basis, unless you're living in a fucking cave somewhere like Tony Stark in the original Iron Man. A little holler back to Tony. But right now, what we get to discuss are some of the best movies that have ever come out, in my opinion. So here we go, the final episode in our countdown to Endgame. We're going to talk about the Black Panther, Ant-Man and the Wasp, and Infinity War. Yes, in that order. I know chronologically speaking, that's not how it should go, but I do think Infinity War deserves its own kind of piece of the pie or whipped cream topping or some other metaphor on how it deserves to be put up at the top of a mountain. I'm really searching for metaphors and they're just not coming. So let's get it started, y'all. So we're going to open up with Black Panther. In my opinion, in a lot of people's opinion, and you can't really argue this, one of the best movies that has come out, not just from the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but just overall. The imagery, God, the storylines, the father, son, the king, and the prince, and the forgotten family that, you know, comes back with a vengeance and tries to take over the throne, and you know, the new age versus the old ways of doing things, tradition versus, you know, breaking tradition. So many things within this movie were brought up that I highly enjoyed. The actors in this, Chadwick Boseman, Michael B. Jordan, who I don't really like, but I loved his Killmonger. And you had Martin Freeman as Everett Ross, and you got Ulysses Klaue. I mean, this individual, you know, when we're talking about Andy Serkis, he can play everything from Gollum to, you know, the monkey in Planet of the Apes. His name escapes me right now. But playing a real-time character who has a mixtape coming out, who's just like really just intense and raunchy is pretty impressive. I like this guy. He is a little more amped up than he was in Age of Ultron when we first get to see him, but he is one of T'Challa's actual enemies within the comic book. So let's get it started. So Civil War is when we first get introduced to T'Chaka and T'Challa as they're joining the UN and they're going to sign the Sokovia Accords in accordance with what the generals presented to the Avengers and the Avengers agree upon. Now, T'Chaka dies. Spoiler alert. I'm sorry if you're listening now and you haven't seen it. Fuck off. But now we see T'Challa face his greatest fear of losing his father and becoming king when he felt he wasn't ready. But what we see in this movie is a theme that, you know, he says to his son in the ancestral realm, he says, if a father hasn't prepared his son to be king, then he wasn't that great of a father. Something to that extent. I haven't seen it in a while, but I have seen this movie so many times that I should know that verbatim. It's something to that extent, but basically that father-son relationship comes up over and over again where T'Challa challenges his dad on leaving his cousin behind when T'Chaka kills his brother for turning his back on Wakanda and stealing vibranium and trying to bring their technology to the world, which in the end is what his son, Killmonger, wants to do for the rest. He wants to do that for the world as well. He wants to take all the weapons that Wakanda has made and all the technological advances and bring them to every African-American in the world because they've been oppressed forever. And he wants to give them this technology so that they can overcome and overtake their oppressors. So not only all the things that I mentioned before about the themes of this movie, but we talk about the politics and racism and bigotry are brought up so heavily in this movie. And, you know, I could go through all of the fight scenes and the fact that no other Avenger was really mentioned in this movie. Tony Stark doesn't make an appearance, which is a big deal. Everett Ross does come back in Ulysses. Ulysses Klaue comes, and those are people that we have seen reoccurring, but they're the only white people in this movie that ever show up in Wakanda until Infinity War. But you see a lot of these themes come up in that last one that I spoke about, the racism and that bigotry and just kind of, you know, where America has gone and how Wakanda has just kind of stayed back and watch it just kind of sizzle out there in the distance. At the end, Killmonger makes a statement that is so intense. I was in the theater, and there was a row of black gentlemen in front of me, and they're watching the film, and we're all enjoying it together. And this line was said, and I immediately just kind of crawled into my shirt and felt like I was responsible for any form of slavery that had happened in the past. It was a pretty intense comment. Let's listen to that right now.
Maybe we can still heal you. Why? So you could just lock me up? No. Just bury me in the ocean with my ancestors that jumped from the ships, because they knew death was better than bondage.
It gives me chills, but it does represent so much of what this movie was trying to showcase and share. Is, you know, there's things that we can do, there's things that we can change in this world that may be simple and some of them may be highly advanced, but really it's just about owning up to what you can control and you being the change that you want to see. And while we can't have superhero powers and we can't drink from the heart-shaped herb and you know, have vibranium coursing through our bodies so we could all be superheroes hidden in the jungles of Africa under a giant dome force field, we can choose to make the right decision that will ultimately affect others around us and not, you know, turn away from people that we care about or turn people away that, you know, his father says he was the one mistake I wanted to forget. And, you know, we have these choices that we can make. And, you know, the choices in the past of our forefathers were the most horrendous decisions and paths that were ever chosen in world history, not just American history, because it was happening in Europe as well. But this movie takes this topic, which everyone knows about, and turns it in and allows it to be accepted and received by such a larger audience, an audience that has been following this character through the comic books and throughout, you know, its existence. And, you know, maybe a lot of people didn't think that this guy would show up on the screen. I mean, this had been tested in the 90s, I believe, when Marvel actually brought up Blade to be a live-action movie, and Wesley Snipes played Blade. He actually, for a long time, wanted to play Black Panther in a live-action movie. It just never came to fruition, and now we see it, which, if, I mean, you know, Wesley Snipes, if you're listening out there, bro, I love you in the movies that you're in. I think Demolition Man, some of your best work. But I don't see you as a Black Panther in this film. You know, the 90s were good to you. They were good to us. You're Passenger 57. I will always bet on Black because of that. But now, you know, you gotta hand over the reins. You know, you got to get over it. I don't know if you're sitting there stewing still, just watching this movie on repeat, watching the, you know, bonus features and just being like, fuck, why is it my name in the credits? But I, you know, myself, Wesley Snipes, you know, we digress. We move on. But, you know, Killmonger wasn't able to. And he accepted death, and, you know, he felt it was better than bondage, which, again, a very powerful statement. Black Panther, very quick synopsis, very quick review. My favorite, saw it 5 times in the theater, saw it with multiple people in the theater. I would go and pay money to see this movie in the theater again. I got it immediately when it came out on digital copy, and I watch it as often as I can. Got a couple Lego sets, got some, you know, action figures. I have multiple t-shirts of this. If you were to come into my house, or if you were to ask me, I mean, duh, if you were to ask me, you'd find out that one of my favorite Marvel movies is Black Panther. But I could prove it to you as well. So just ask me. Just ask me to prove it on any given day. Moving on. Ant-Man and the Wasp. Ant-Man and the Wasp was a movie that, like Spider-Man Far From Home, is talked about. People want to see it. People know that it's necessary to see it. But people don't really get it afterwards, or people don't really understand, like, why it was necessary to see it. That's my personal opinion. I liked Ant-Man and the Wasp. I like the continuation of the story. This is another movie, similar to Black Panther, that follows characters that we were introduced in their first origin movie, but we don't see many Avengers play a part in this one either. So in the end credit scene, we do see how it's applicable to Infinity War, because this is supposed to take place either concurrently with it or like at, right afterwards, because the Hank Pym, his wife, and the Wasp actually disappear and they go after the snap. So we see that they actually, this plays a huge role and a huge part within the universe and within the timeline. But when we're watching it, we're learning a lot about the quantum realm. It's following its own storyline. So in my mind, what I would like to liken it to is the Iron Man trilogy. Iron Man 1, 2, and 3, they're dealing with their own set of problems and their own series of events that have nothing to do with the MCU overall. Thor did that as well, but you know, when you got into Thor Ragnarok, it actually had to do with so much more. But we haven't seen anything of the first Iron Man obviously introduced us to the MCU. The second Iron Man introduced us to the Whiplash, my apologies, and you know, his issue with Tony Stark, and we see Hammer coming in there trying to steal his tech, but we don't see a lot of, you know, how it applies overall. Like maybe the evolution of War Machine, but or the Iron Patriot, but it doesn't really, you know, it's not applicable overall to the main storyline. Then Iron Man 3, we're talking about, you know, Guy Pearce introducing us to this technology that's supposed to, you know, create these gods, but that doesn't play in anywhere else either. And Pepper's not even mentioned to have this issue within her again, so somehow she was cured by someone. I don't know if she went to Wakanda or some shit, but something happened. Right, we're talking about Ant-Man and the Wasp. So getting back to that, they deal with a lot of the quantum realm. We see a lot of the shrinking and the you know, the gianting, increasing in size, lack of a better term. And we see that, you know, Scott Lang is he got away from being Ant-Man. He's on house arrest. And Hank Pym needs him. He needs to get the information. He thinks he has the Ant-Man suit, but he doesn't. And they find out that there's something within his brain that connects him to the original Wasp, to Michelle Pfeiffer, to Hank Pym's wife. And they realize that as they're building this quantum generator, that Scott is somehow connected to her because he also went into the quantum realm. Again, this is a story that I enjoyed, but watching the movie for what it's worth, sure, I followed it, but I get so sucked into the storyline that follows leading up to Infinity War. And this is before Infinity War was launched, but I love watching that timeline as it grew. And, you know, okay, Richie, what are you telling me, lies and bullshit? Because you just said Black Panther is your favorite movie. Mainly because it was an origin story, and the origin story was linking from Civil War when we were introduced to T'Challa, and everybody wanted to hear more about him. Even if you like felt like, oh, I'm not really sure about that character. Oh, he's just like on the side. Like he's got some beef with the Winter Soldier because he thinks he did the bomb. But then we see this movie and it's like, oh shit. And then Wakanda plays such a huge part in Infinity War as the last fight scene takes place there as the last refuge for the Avengers. And it just plays so well into it. It sounds like I'm fucking knocking Ant-Man and the Wasp because I keep going into other movies and talking about how amazing they are. But this movie itself was good. And we see that the original Wasp, Michelle Pfeiffer, I forget her name in the movie. I know I could use Google, but I'm refraining from doing that. She gets pulled back out of the quantum realm by Scott. And then we're facing the Ghost, who's got a problem, and Lawrence Fishburne, who's kind of a bad guy at this point, but he used to be partners with Hank Pym, but he's a little pissed off. But the Ghost is dealing with constantly being like in and out of quantum fields, and so they're, you know, trying to figure out a way to fix her because Lawrence Fishburne's character tried to he felt responsible for it, which is unfortunate because the blast went through her on an experiment that he was trying to perform. And then, you know, it's the same old, same old. Scott Lang is dealing with his relationship with his daughter, and you have the two, his three, the ex-cons have their new security system, and they're trying to build on that. And we see that Michael Peña brings such great humor again in this movie. And as the ex-cons are trying to get their business together, they get hooked up into this because there's another villain that's trying to get that technology from Hank Pym. Hank Pym is always, you know, trying to get his shit stolen. He seems like kind of a dick when it comes to a lot of that stuff, so I can see how, like, you know, all these individuals are trying to take it from him. Nobody should steal, okay? That's a lesson from today. Nobody should steal, even though Richie's saying that this guy's a dick. Like, even if someone's an asshole, it doesn't mean that you should go kill him. You should just, like, make them feel like an asshole. But that never works out, does it? Because then they just, like, what bullies do, you know, they just take it in and then they spit it back out at you and you never feel like you fucking got them. And then you just get angry and you try to swing at them and then they, like, duck. And then you get punched and you're sitting there bleeding on the ground and you're like, oh, God, why did I do that? I'm never going to win. And you grow up and you'd be a successful, like, lawyer and you've got a lot of money. And then you go back and you try to prove something to them and it ends up they're fucking your wife. This storyline never gets any better, folks. It just keeps going this way. Back to Ant-Man and the Wasp. The quantum realm is a place. What I think they tried to do with this movie was make the quantum realm so identifiable for audiences that we would understand it if they were going to use it in Endgame. I'm going to skip over this. As you could tell, I wasn't really into this movie. It was good. At the end, the end credits scene, we see the snap happen and we see the Pims go away. Sad, sad day, but it's applicable. Now, moving into what I think would be probably my second favorite movie, the movie that brings together everybody. So another team up, another mashup of all of our characters. But at this point, now we've introduced basically all of them that are going to be from these chapters and these phases of Marvel. We see all of them together on the big screen. So we see them also interacting with each other, which is a huge fucking deal because the comedy that ensues from the Guardians with Thor and then the Guardians with Iron Man and Spider-Man and Doctor Strange when they're on Titan, the connection and just the energy that comes from them when they're on different planets or when they're interacting and trying to figure out plans. The comedy, even though this movie is just so desperate and desolate and just depressing, is really strong. So from the beginning, you see the Asgardian ship that was alluded to in Thor Ragnarok, as we talked about at the end credit scene. You see that Thanos and his fucking team of dickheads have come onto the ship and they've killed basically anybody left of Asgard, which is Asgard. As we found out in Thor Ragnarok, it's not about a place, it's about a people. And we see them all in the ship and they're all dead and Thor's fucking up and then Loki gets his neck crushed in the most realistic way that I could ever imagine a giant alien crushing a god's neck. It just does that click, 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 pop. Loki's trying to be like really sneaky. A lot of people since, you know, this released and leading up into Endgame have just hypothesized that he's going to come back again because he always comes back from the dead. I think he's really dead, people. He crushed his neck. And we see, you know, this is where Thanos starts to collect the stones. And this is also where Thor commits to murdering Thanos and says he's going to pay for it. And then we see Heimdall die. And then we see Hulk actually sent back to Earth to warn Tony and Pepper and then Doctor Strange. And then again, the comedy ensues. And then we just see this massive fight. And then we go and we find out that Vision and the Scarlet Witch and the Black Widow and Falcon and Captain America. My God, the Captain America introduction scene when the train goes by. I was applauding and screaming in the theater. I just watched it the other night and I did the same thing. It was so fucking awesome. He is so incredibly handsome in this movie and he's just a fucking stud. He is able to defeat Thanos. I'm kidding, but he holds him back pretty fucking well in the end scene. And you just see the strength he has when him and T'Challa are running on the plains of Wakanda towards the force field and they're going to fight those big fucking alien things and they're like racing. But because it's Wakanda, they're like, oh yeah, T'Challa's faster. But Captain America's like right behind him. They're pretty fucking intense. And that scene between two of my favorite characters, T'Challa and Captain America, when he says,
we need to destroy the stone now.
Vision, get your ass back on the table.
We will hold them off.
Wanda, as soon as that stone's out of his hand, you blow it to hell.
Hello.
Evacuate the city. Engage all defenses. And get this man's shield.
One of my favorite scenes. It gave me chills. Still gives me chills. I'm getting chills right now. All over my body. Every part of my body. It's like up in and on the side and around. Infinity War, we see Thanos actually get every one of the stones and put them to use in augmenting reality and making Gamora think that he actually was dead and that she killed him and making her feel remorse. And then getting he got the Soul Stone by killing her because he had to kill something he loves. And then he gets all the other ones by decimating the planets that they were being stored on. But he is such a fucking intense villain. But he has this altruism that he feels that if he makes this decision to solve the planet's woes and the universe's woes of being overpopulated, if he could just do this without the use of guns and violence like he has before, if he could just do this simple snap, then the world would be a better place. And never did anybody think, I believe, that he would actually do the snap. And, you know, he tells Thor, you know, you should have gone for the head. But he didn't. He went for the body. So we see Thor dealing with this defeat that he was, you know, he's never had defeat. He's killed, what do you say, over 3,000 fucking people. He's 1,500 years old, and this is the first time that he had ever faced defeat. And he was so confused. He said, what did you do when he made that snap happen? And it's, again, one of those moments where you sit back and you're like, holy shit, this actually happened. And you can't believe it. You can't believe that you're watching this movie with all your beloved characters, the characters that were introduced in some of your favorite movies in the past 10 years, past 11 years, and you go, oh my fucking God, they're gone. You see all the Guardians go to dust. Spider-Man goes to dust. It's the big three that are left, as well as some ancillary characters on the side. Some of the main characters are gone. So this is where all of the theories start to come up. So Infinity War brought up a lot of people's idea machines, you know, or brains working, or however you want to say it. Man, today is not my day, but it got a lot of people thinking, and it got a lot of people coming up with these theories that ultimately don't mean shit, because the Russo brothers are probably going to flip it on its head and make us all fucking just like eat our words and just sit there for 3 hours in Endgame and go, holy shit, maybe it's going to be even more depressing. There's got to be some form of a happy ending, but we have to give it to the Russo brothers. The Russo brothers are able to make such a succinct story with so many fucking characters and storylines that can link together and that can jump from place to place, from planet to planet, universe to universe, and go from humor to sadness, to connectivity, to, you know, that energy I spoke of. They're so good at putting all of that together on this fine, fine timeline that as you look out, you can go, man, I can see that happening. And then you're not expecting the next twist, because it's not completely far-fetched, but it's also not very complicated. But it makes this massive change in the entire universe that we have known for so long. So it's going to be out in theaters on Thursday, and then, you know, forever, and then you'll be able to own it at one point, and then we'll all be talking about how amazing it was leading up to it, and then, you know, at some point it's just going to become another movie in our library that we watch every once in a while. You ever think about that? Like, all the movies that we have right now, at one point were so sought after, and there were things that we were like, man, I can't wait till that movie fucking comes out, or, you know, imagining if they made a movie like that. Somebody just shared with me Patton Oswalt in this extra deleted scene from Parks and Rec where he went off during a filibuster that he was trying to create for City Hall, and he just talked about Marvel and Disney and Star Wars coming together to make this crossover film about Thanos and Darth Vader. And it's just like this amazing thought process. And this was prior to all of this coming out, and some of it actually lines up, and he talks about The Mandalorian and all this stuff. But I think about all the predictions and the theories that people have come up with, and really none of it matters, because once this movie comes out, it's all going to blow our minds and we're going to sit back and go, wow, that was a great movie. Somebody I was walking into work with today said, I just hope it all makes sense and then it'll be a good movie. And I was like, man, what a fucking simple but amazing thought, right? Or like an idea going into that movie. And there's so many times that people watch movies or go into movies or think about movies that are going to be made, that are being projected to be made, and they're like, they just start fucking trolling and saying how shitty it's going to be. And yeah, I know I said bad things about Captain Marvel, but the reviews had been out at that point. And I also knew that Brie Larson wasn't a good actress, so it's not like she was going to change overnight. But now we see, you know, this giant movie that's supposed to be this end cap, you know, this bookend to what we all love. And really, nobody should say like, oh, this movie's going to suck, or I hope they do this, I hope they do that, because ultimately, whatever they do is going to be, you know, what they envisioned for this movie franchise. And, you know, hopefully Kyle and I will be able to get together again and talk over the microphone and talk over FaceTime and give you another episode. And what's going to happen now is, after Endgame, you know, I'm sure like Chris Hemsworth and Chris Evans and, you know, Tom Hiddleston and even Brie Larson are sitting there going, you know, what's next? What are we going to do? You know, that's exactly what Kyle and I are thinking. So it's not, you know, we're not far from them. We're almost like exactly alike. So what are we going to do? Well, we're going to continue with the Don't Get Him Started podcast, and we're going to continue reviewing comic book movies. So there's so many movies that we've just kind of left on the side and just haven't touched, like The Watchmen and the Christopher Nolan's Batman that we've talked about, but we haven't really gotten into, and The Phantom, and all this random shit that's out there. Howard the Duck. We could go into so many things. I talked about Blade. Man, shit, even as I'm sitting here talking about it, I think about all these topics that we could go into. So we're not going to stop talking about it. I'm not going to stop getting Kyle started. It does put an end to our series on Countdown to Endgame, so it is kind of sad. But, you know, it's kind of refreshing. Maybe we get to watch some other movies out there. Maybe some movies that you suggest. Maybe some movies that we've been wanting to talk about. So I thank you for listening to this series, and I hope that you get out there on Thursday or Friday and enjoy the movie with everybody else, your loved ones, a friend, a group of friends, whoever it is. And I hope it's entertaining. I hope it's a good movie, and, you know, I hope it makes sense. Peace.